This is Rogue Talk on 94.3 The Bridge, your hometown voice. And now your host, the Rogue announcer, Jeff Smith.
This is Rogue Talk, and I am the Rogue announcer, Jeff Smith. This is Rogue Talk for October 28th, 2016. I want to welcome you back to the show. We've got another great show for you here today. If you can't tell from my voice, I'm a little under the weather, so I'm going to try and push through here on get through this show. Had to change the show a little bit for a couple of reasons. I had originally scheduled an interview, and because of some confusion in that scheduling, it resulted in me leaving an old lady in a park for almost an hour. It's not something I'm happy about. And when we get her in here on the show, I'm sure we'll talk about that a little bit. But I want to send out a little apology to Esther. We're going to get her on the show. I actually would have rescheduled that interview for this week and gotten her on the show today, which was my intention originally. But because I came down with this cold that has been going through my family and I was the last domino to fall, I decided that cooping up another person in the studio with me was probably not the best thing to do. So we'll try and get that interview, you know, in the next couple of weeks. But Esther Morrison, or actually she was Esther Gambardella, she played professional baseball back after the war in the All-American Girls Professional Baseball League. And she was born as Esther Gambardella, but she thought that was too hard for people to say, so she took the name, another family name of Morrison. And so we're going to have her on the show real soon. It just didn't work out for today. But again, I wanted to apologize to Esther for the confusion and let the few people know that I had already told she would be on the show that we're not going to have her this week. What we are going to talk about today, and we'll get to that in the second segment, is the Electoral College. With the election coming up, we always hear all kinds of talk about the Electoral College, but I noticed something different in the conversation this year. Some different people that normally I wouldn't have expected to be against the Electoral College or wanting to change it or get rid of it are showing some support for it. So we're going to talk about that, but we'll get to that a little bit later. Some things of note in the community this week. First of all, Mr. Bruce Sund, who is the soccer coach for the boys soccer team at the high school, also the coach for the middle school boys basketball teams. He was in Medford on Wednesday when the Jackson County Board of Commissioners gave their monthly community service award to Bruce for his work out at the Evans Valley Education and Community Center. Yeah, you have to excuse me, trying to keep my voice here. And so he was recognized, and when he accepted the award, he immediately recognized his wife, Cheryl, Cheryl Martin Sund. And, of course, he knows how hard she's worked in conjunction with him, excuse me, and obviously quite a few others, in getting Evans Valley Elementary, I'm struggling here today, guys, converted into the community center and education center that it is now. And so he received that award. He was also recognized for his volunteer coaching as well. And so we want to salute Bruce and Cheryl for all their hard work and for everything they do for the people and even more specifically the kids in the community. Rogue Talk would like to give you a big salute for that. So once again, congratulations to Bruce and to Cheryl. So another thing we talked about here on Rogue Talk a couple weeks back was the FFA can and coin drive. Of course, they're collecting food For the needy, and as well as money. We talked about that in our show with the FFA, that the money actually can even go longer, sometimes can go a longer way in feeding more people than the food donations. But that food drive and food and coin drive is coming to an end. It goes to the end of the month. So Halloween, which is Monday, will be the last day for that can and coin drive. If you'd like to donate to the FFA can and coin drive, you can either notify or contact the school and they can let you know how to get that done, or contact me here at Rogue Talk, either on the Facebook page, or you can email feedback at 943thebridge.com. And just put on the subject line Rogue Talk, and I can get you hooked up with the right people if you have some donations for that. And we salute the FFA for that month-long coin and can drive. So good job there. Now moving over to another subject we talked about previously here on Rogue Talk, and that would be the VFW scholarships. And they give out several scholarships each year. And they're also involved in a national art competition. And the reason I'm bringing this up today is the deadline for the art competition, or to get involved in the art competition through the local VFW, and would be tomorrow, so Saturday the 29th. So if you're interested in getting into this national art competition, you need to contact Sherry Prudon at 541-761-1379. Once again, that's 541-761-1379. And if you're interested also in any of their scholarships and want to find out how you can qualify for those scholarships, you can also contact Sherry or contact the VFW. You can also go back to the Bridge website, go to the Rogue Talk page, and there is the show is posted there. When we had Sherry's husband on the show, talking about the VFW. So you can learn more about that by listening to Rogue Talk, or you can contact Sherry. And another note from involving the high school, and this would have to do with the Veterans Day coming up. The school won't be in session on Veterans Day, but the leadership class, along with Principal Wright, are having an assembly and lunch honoring our veterans. So all veterans are invited to the Rogue River Junior Senior High School gym on Monday, November 7th. The assembly will start at 11:10 and will last about half an hour, and then that will be followed by a pulled pork lunch. So if you know any veterans or you are a veteran, I would encourage you. These kids really want to recognize your service and your sacrifice for this country. And so get a hold of the school if you have any more questions. But otherwise, again, that'll be in the gym on Monday, November 7th. And I will mention that again on next week's Rogue Talk. So get out there and enjoy a nice day with the kids at the high school and a nice pulled pork lunch. And finally, from the Rogue River Press, they're sponsoring their 9th annual Trick or Treat on Main Street. And that'll be Monday, Halloween. And that goes from 3 to 6. And if you'd like to see a map of all the participating merchants along Main Street and a few of the other side streets, you can pick up a copy of this week's Rogue River Press. And there is a map there giving all the details of their trick-or-treat on Main Street. So we would encourage you to get out to get your kids out there and get out to visit all those merchants and thank them for being a part of the 9th annual trick-or-treat on Main Street. So that's all the community events I have for you. So let's move to some Rogue River High School sports. Yesterday, out at Valley of the Rogue State Park, the Chieftain boys they compete at the District 6 JV division and had some really good finishes there. In fact, three of the boys in the top 10 in the 3A, 2A, 1A District 6 JV division. Robert Buttram was the third place finisher, and right behind Robert was Evan Mingerhausen. He was fourth, and Grant Fehrenbacher finished ninth. So congratulations, boys. All three of you in the top 10. That's an excellent finish for the Chieftain program, and we'll be looking forward to continuing that success going into next year. And moving over to Chieftain football, of course, right here on 94.3 The Bridge, last Friday, the Chieftains traveled to Monroe High School. And the Chieftains struggled a bit, showed some more promise, especially on the offensive side of the ball, than in previous games. But they were still pretty badly overmatched. The final score was 53-14. But again, the score might not completely reflect the progress that the Chieftains seem to be making. There was a lot of positives that we saw in that game last Friday, and so we'll be looking forward to see if that translates even further into tonight's game, and we'll talk about that a little bit later. Now, in girls soccer, they finished their season last Saturday, and they took on Cascade Christian over at Beck Field, and they lost that game 8-1. And while they finished the year with an overall record of 3-8-1, and they were 0-8 in league play, that really doesn't reflect how well these girls have played this season. It's been a really pretty good season for the girls. It's a fairly young team, and they've showed a lot of promise and have played some really good games and just haven't had the results in the win column. But I'm looking forward to how this team will mature and progress going into the next couple of years. I think they're going to prove to be, you know, much more and more competitive as in the next couple of years as these girls mature and play together more. So we want to salute girls soccer for a great season, even if the league record doesn't reflect that. We know how hard they worked and how much better they're going to be as the years go on. And finally, moving to the Chieftain boys soccer team, they also lost a game on Saturday. That was played right after the girls' game. They hosted St. Mary's and lost 4-0, and that'll slot them in the third place position in the District 5 standings. Puts them a half a game behind Cascade Christian and two games behind St. Mary's. So they will get into the playoffs. The District 5 conference has three automatic bids, and the Chieftains had a strong season with only three losses on the season. So we salute the Chieftain boys, and we look forward to see how they will do in the playoffs. They will be playing on Wednesday, November 2nd. In a game to be determined. The brackets, the OSAA has not filled in the brackets yet for the for the state playoffs. So we don't know who's playing who and where, but the Chieftains will most likely be on the road for that game. We just don't know where that'll be, but we know it'll be Wednesday the 2nd. And that's it for Chieftain scores. And that's everything I've got for you in this segment. And in the next segment, we'll be talking about the Electoral College. And I've got a couple of sound clips to play for you. And if my voice holds up, then that'll be all. But if my voice gets any weaker here, I've got some other sound clips in reserve if I need to. But we'll see how it goes. So we'll be back in just a minute to talk about the Electoral College. Don't go away.
The Electoral College. You've probably heard of it, but might not be too clear on how it works. As outlined in Article 2, Section 1 of the Constitution, the President of the U.S. isn't elected directly by the citizens, but by electors from each state. When you vote, you're actually just telling your state electors the candidate you want them to vote for. There are 538 electors total, one for each of the members of the House and Senate, and three for Washington, D.C. Each state is given three electors to start, and the rest are divided based on population. Every state is winner-take-all. If a candidate gets a majority of the vote in a state, he or she gets all of its electors. Some people think this system gives big states an unfair advantage because they carry so many of the electoral votes. If you win California, Texas, Florida, and New York, you're already more than halfway towards winning the election. But it seems the Electoral College system actually gives the advantage to the smaller states. Since every state is given three electors to start, small states that would only have one or two votes based on population end up with three or four votes instead. And to compensate for these extra votes given to small states, large states need to give up electors. This means that votes in small states carry more influence than votes in large states. Like in Rhode Island, a state that has 0.33% of the U.S.'s population, but 0.74% of the country's electors. On the other side is California, which has 12.18% of the population, but only 10.22% of electors. Because of this, it's possible to win the necessary number of electors with a surprisingly low percentage of the popular vote. You just need to go after the small states with the most powerful votes. So let's start with Rhode Island. Since it's winner-take-all, you only need a little over half of the state to vote for you to win its electors. So you're off to a good start with just 0.17% of the popular vote, but 0.74% of electors. Then comes Wyoming, where winning half of the votes would give you 0.56% more of the electors, with just 0.1% more of the vote. Then Vermont, where the same thing happens. If you continue winning these states with high voting power by just over half the vote, you'll find yourself gaining electors much more quickly than you're actually receiving votes. And eventually, boom, you've hit the magic number of 270 electors and won the presidency. From looking at the map, it seems like you won fair and square, capturing a majority of the states across the country. But don't forget that in this scenario, 78% of the country didn't vote for you. Now this is, of course, the absolute worst-case scenario. But the fact that the Electoral College system could elect a leader against the will of the majority, and has four times before, may be a sign that the system is worth re-examining.
Welcome back to Rogue Talk, and that audio you just heard, that came from the Business Insider, a YouTube video, and it does a pretty good job of spelling out how the Electoral College works, and that's what our topic today is going to be. But there's a couple of things I want to point out with that. First of all, they said that each state's Electoral College votes are all or nothing, and actually that's not true. Maine and Nebraska actually split their Electoral College votes up based on different factors for each state, but ultimately they've taken the idea of the Electoral College, which gives each state a say in the election instead of what a popular vote would do, which just gives the majority rule, which is not what we do in our republic, and we'll get into that some more. They're taking that same idea and breaking it down within the state, but otherwise the rest of the states are an all or nothing. But the other thing that the point they're trying to make in that video, and you can't see the video here. So if you want to go to YouTube and watch that, you can search Business Insider Electoral College, and you can see the graphics that they use. It's a little easier to follow, obviously, with the graphics. But the point they were trying to make, and you can hear it in the numbers that they give, is that a president could be elected because of the Electoral College with a very low percentage of the popular vote. Well, we've had many, many, many elections, And that's never happened, and it's likely never going to happen. There have been four instances where the popular vote winner was not the winner of the election, including the election of George W. Bush when he ran against Al Gore, who was the vice president at the time of that election. And so it has happened that the popular vote winner doesn't win the presidency, but it's never been as extreme as this example that they're giving in the video, mainly because a lot of these smaller states that they're saying you can go through and get, you get a higher percentage of electoral votes with a much lower percentage of popular votes. Well, it's true that you can do that technically. That's just not going to happen. Maine is most likely never going to vote the same way as North Dakota. There's definite regional differences in opinion, in ideology throughout the country, which is kind of the whole idea of the Electoral College. It gives the states a say in the election. Take the West Coast, for instance. The reason I'm talking about this today is some of my, I don't know if I characterize them as my conservative friends or Republican friends. I don't really know. I assume they're registered as Republicans, but I don't know that. But they tend to be more conservative. A couple of them recently have been supporting the idea of getting rid of the Electoral College. Well, the example that I give them is you can come right here onto the West Coast or the Western, you know, United States. Let's take the state that we're in, Oregon. There will be several hundred thousand more votes for the Democrat candidate in Oregon than there is for the Republican candidate. That's just the nature of politics here in Oregon. The northern half of the state is densely populated and is extremely leaning to the Democrat left. So, and I don't have the exact numbers, but let's say there's 300,000 more votes for Hillary Clinton than there is for Donald Trump. Well, you take a state like, let's say, Idaho, that would tend to be a more conservative state, but a very low population state. Well, those 400,000 votes over and above what was needed for Hillary Clinton to win the state of Oregon would cancel out the same number of votes of the people in Idaho. And some of you say, well, that's okay, it's the will of the people. Well, keep in mind, we're not America. We're the United States of America. We were founded as a republic. It is a form of democracy, but it is not a direct democracy, and there's a lot of reasons for that. A direct democracy, in my opinion, is mob rule. In most cases, it probably would work out fine, but it doesn't give the needed representation for the president. So, like, for instance, in my case, they would say, well, you know, you live in Oregon, but you vote Republican. Well, your vote doesn't count. Well, that's true, but I can choose not to live in Oregon if I'm worried that my vote doesn't count. But that's not going to change how Oregon votes. Whether I live here or I move out of the state, it doesn't do me any good either way. And in the popular vote, that vote is watered down even more. So if there was ever a political shift in this state for some reason, maybe we finally elected a Republican governor that would not waste all of our money the way the Democrat governors in this state have done in the years that I've lived here. And maybe he became real popular, and the shift of the state gave a Republican candidate for president more of a chance of winning the state. Well, there's no way to affect that election if it's, again, if it's a popular vote. The votes of one state, you know, except for with the exception of the really high population states such as California, Oregon, even New York, which is, you know, a tiny state but has a huge population, we're not going to affect them one way or another. But we can affect our own state. And I'm not necessarily against proportional voting within the state the way that Maine and Nebraska do it. But I'm not in favor of getting rid of the Electoral College. Again, my feeling is we were the United States of America. We were founded as a republic. And it's kind of a side note, but it's funny because a lot of times, you know, of course, conservatives or Republicans sometimes, they're always pushing for smaller government. And so it's always, you'll hear people say, well, you know, you're anti-government. Well, actually, if you look at the way a republic is set up, it supporting the Republican, small r Republican form of government is the opposite of anti-government. Yes, we want small government. The Constitution spells out the enumerated powers of the federal government, and we spend money in so many areas that are not within the 13 enumerated powers within the Constitution. That's why we want smaller government. We want the federal government to do what it's supposed to do as it's spelled out in the Constitution, not to be doing other things that should be left to the states or even to local communities. But again, that's for another day. But the point of that is, in the Republican form of government, we do put a lot of power in the representatives that we elect. In fact, we don't, well, it used to be that we didn't directly elect the senators. And the senators, the Senate is a good example of what the Electoral College is. It gives an equal say for every state, regardless of size or population. But then you have the House of Representatives, which are directly elected, and the senators are too, but again, they weren't intended to be. That got changed with a constitutional amendment that would be one that I would support the repeal of, but again, that's another issue. But we put a lot of trust in a Republican form of government into the people we elect. We don't elect judges. We weren't supposed to elect senators. So we only elect, and I'm talking judges on the national level. Obviously, in many jurisdictions, you elect your local judges, but that's not what we're talking about here. We only elect our representative in our district for the House of Representatives. So we don't elect all of the other representatives. We only get to vote on our representative. We weren't supposed to vote on our senators, and we vote for president. So we're the Republican form of government, and again, I'm saying small r Republican. I'm not talking parties right now. We put a lot of trust in our leaders to do the will of the people, and often they don't. But the alternative is, you know, is majority rule, and it's sometimes referred to, and I would agree with this assessment, is mobocracy. We have a wave of social change going on in this country. And while most of it is constitutionally protected by your rights to free speech and other things, in some cases it's being pushed on people, and they use rights as the reason for this. Of course, it's a complete misunderstanding of what a right is. If you have to trample on someone else's rights to claim your rights, it's not a right. At the very least, if it's something you're allowed to do by law, it's a privilege, but it's not a right. But so in our current social climate, the mob rule, or at least the apparent mob rule of what the media would have you think is the majority opinion of things, would give one group of people the ability to take the rights away from another group of people. We've talked about on this show the case of the baker here in Oregon that, unfortunately, I will say, made a poor decision in how they discriminated against a wedding. There was probably a better way for them to handle that. In fact, I mentioned on this show, I discriminate all the time in my business, but not in a mean or a illegal way. If there's a job that is something I just don't have the ability to do, whether I'm a one-man operation, if it's a big job and I just don't have the manpower to do it, I'll find a way not to take that job. I don't insult anybody, and I don't use my religious beliefs to turn down a job. But again, I can discriminate in my mind however I like, but I wouldn't discriminate against somebody because of their race or their religion or their gender or any of that. But again, I can keep things in my mind and not express them externally and not have a problem. And so that's where I think the bakery went wrong on that front. But where their rights are being taken away because of this supposed majority rule would be, you know, they're under no obligation to provide labor to anybody. Now, if they refuse to sell a cake that was in their store to somebody because of their race or their sexual orientation or whatever, yes, that probably is discriminatory and probably shouldn't be okay. But in the case of them not wanting to bake a cake for the gay wedding, first of all, gay weddings weren't legal in Oregon at the time of that case, so that's a whole nother issue. But they have their religious freedom rights to not give their labor to something they don't believe in. And unfortunately, they have been, you know, the system has not treated them well. And again, the representative form of government, you know, may or may not right those wrongs. And in this case, it hasn't. But mobocracy won't right those wrongs. There's a popular wave right now, you know, whether you agree with it or you don't, for a lot of social issues that maybe a lot of Christians don't agree with. Well, with mobocracy, the majority rule would just overrun them. And so the idea of a representative form of government is a form of cooler heads prevail. It doesn't always work that way. No system is perfect, but it's the system that we put in with our Constitution. It's the system that I believe in. And again, the Electoral College fits into that system. We are a nation of individual states, and it's not a perfect system. Again, there have been four instances where the popular vote was overridden by the Electoral College. But honestly, I say, you know, that's good. That's a good thing. And not because the Republican candidate in Bush versus Gore, although I would say that knowing what we know now about Al Gore and Al Gore presidency would have been catastrophic to the economy of this country because of he's much more environmentally driven than even President Obama, who gave away a ton of money in the stimulus package to green companies that are now defunct. But Al Gore would have been much, much worse for the economy as far as the green economy. In fact, he makes a lot of his money off of the investments that our government put into the green energy. And that's not to say green energy is a bad thing, but they wasted an awful lot of money on companies that turned out to not be good companies and not have good products, which is why generally why a company fails. If your product is not successful, you don't have a successful company. And so companies like Solyndra, I'm afraid with an Al Gore presidency, it would have been, you know, maybe tenfold of what even President Obama did with the stimulus package. But again, that's not the reason that I say that's a good thing. The reason I say it's a good thing is the will of the individual states was recognized, and that's the type of country we have here. That's what was founded. It's a republic. Yes, it's considered a form of democracy, but it's truly not a democracy. And again, you can argue with me, and many people would, that we should be a democracy or more of a pure democracy. And, you know, that's an argument for another day, but we are a republic. That is the fact. And the Electoral College fits the republic exactly. It does exactly what it's intended to do. So when I hear some of my conservative friends supporting getting rid of the Electoral College, it's a little troubling. I know where it comes from. The current candidate for president for the Republican Party, who really wasn't a Republican up till a couple of years ago, Donald Trump, is more of a populist. And I've tried to get across to some of these friends of mine that populism, they're very conservative. They're following lots of conservative ideals, and they share them on social media, and they share them with me in our conversations. But populism is not a conservative idea. Yes, I think Trump is a populist, but you can vote for Donald Trump for president or even support Donald Trump as president. And I make the distinction there. I am not a Trump supporter. I will be voting for Trump because I don't want Hillary Clinton to be president for many, many reasons. But I do agree with some of Trump's policies, but I do not agree with his populism. So I am not a Trump supporter, quote unquote. And so you can be a Trump supporter even and a Trump voter, but you don't have to support populism. I voted for George W. Bush, but he did many things that I did not agree with. He spent money, as Mark Levin would say, he spent money like a drunken liberal. He was not a conservative president when it came to his spending policies. He did cut taxes, and as what usually happens, even though the media and others would characterize it differently, when taxes are cut, the revenues to the government over time go up. So I support tax cuts, and he did cut taxes, but he also started a couple of wars. He spent tons and tons of money, and yes, in some cases you can blame that on the Congress, just like where President Clinton gets credit for a lot of the good things he did from a conservative or Republican perspective. But he also was, you know, had a Congress that was not in his favor, and he was, you know, forced to accept some things. But again, the president gets credit for things that happened under his watch. So we had a more conservative Congress when Clinton was in, and he got credit for that. But the, you know, you're going back to Bush, he has to take credit for the things that he did. And yes, maybe a more liberal Congress was forcing his hand on some of the spending, but he was the president. He signs those bills. He has to take the blame for the things that went wrong in his administration, just like Obama will have to take the blame for the things that go wrong in his, and any other president does. So I voted for George W. Bush, but I don't consider myself a Bush supporter. I'm a conservative. I'm not a Republican. I vote. I'm a member of the Republican Party, but that's just a membership in the club. I don't see myself as a Republican, at least not as today's party goes. I think the leadership in the party is fairly weak, and that's being generous. But again, I didn't support a lot of things that Bush did. There's things I think Ronald Reagan was an excellent president, but there was a few things he did I didn't support. We never agree with anybody 100% of the time. And so bringing that back to Trump, you can vote for Donald Trump, you can support Donald Trump, but you don't have to support everything he's talking about and he's doing. I don't agree with some of his trade policy. He seems to think tariffs are a good thing and a way to get things done. And again, I'm not against tariffs 100%. I think there's been times in history where a certain tariff has worked well. But if you look back to the tariffs of the FDR administration, if not for World War II changing the entire dynamic of the country, the tariffs that were put in place by FDR were crushing the economy. They didn't cause the Great Depression, but they definitely made the recovery out of the Great Depression longer. So I don't agree with Trump's policies on or his ideas on tariffs and on protectionism. And again, the same thing goes with this populist idea. So I would put it out there to my conservative friends. The Electoral College has worked very, very well for a very long time. And even in the four instances where the popular vote was not who the president ended up being, I think that's a good thing. I actually think that shows the Electoral College working. And again, that audio I played before, it's just a scenario that it's not realistic. It hasn't ever happened that way, and I don't see it happening that way anytime soon. And again, it's not that these things can't be changed. I've got a little more audio that I'm gonna leave you with as I go out of this segment from Levin TV, and he talks about it in that little segment. We have changed the Electoral College. I believe it's the 12th Amendment was put in to adjust and make it work a little bit better. So that doesn't mean that we can't make adjustments or make changes. And the states, again, they have the ability to make those adjustments and those changes on their own the way that Maine and Nebraska have done. So nothing's a perfect system, but I would plea to my conservative friends. It's usually the liberals that want to get rid of the Electoral College because they believe in a pure democracy. Actually, they don't believe in democracy at all, but on the surface, they believe in a pure democracy. And so I just think it's wrong to be opposing or wanting to get rid of the Electoral College. And so I hope I've made a strong argument to that effect. And I hope you've enjoyed the show today. I'm hoping next week we'll be back on some more community issues. But with the election coming up and with the little snafu, scheduling snafu with Esther, I thought that this was a good topic to touch on before the election. And so I hope you've enjoyed it. And I'm going to go out of this segment with some audio from Levin TV, and I hope you enjoy that. And then we'll be back with the rogue mascot, Cameron. So don't go away.
Liberty's voice, Levin TV.
Madison wasn't a fool. Hamilton wasn't a fool. These men knew exactly what they were doing. At every step, they were trying to figure out how to create a governmental system that would protect our liberty, a governmental system that would embrace the consent of the governed without the rule of the mob, a governmental system that believed in sovereignty, but not populism, not majoritarianism purely, because they were concerned about anarchy and they were concerned about monarchy at the same time. The Electoral College, even though it's complicated, even though it's not perfect, has worked beautifully through our over two centuries. And when it didn't, they went ahead and amended the Constitution with the 12th Amendment to the Constitution, and they adjusted it. And it still works beautifully. Bush versus Gore is a perfect example of that. While the left, while the Democrats may not like the outcome, the system worked. The system worked despite the fact that Al Gore, who lost in Florida legitimately, kept going into court after court after court. The system worked despite the fact that the Florida Supreme Court, controlled by the left, tried to destroy the election rules in the state of Florida and usurp the power of the state legislature. The system worked despite the fact, with good intentions, the U.S. Supreme Court stepped in to stop the Florida Supreme Court. Because in the end, Congress was going to decide this thing anyway.
Welcome back to Rogue Talk. And now joining me in the studio once again, the Rogue Talk mascot, Cameron. Welcome back, Cameron.
Thanks for having me.
So I got a couple of quick announcements, and then we'll get to Cameron's picks. And I actually forgot to look up how you did last week on your picks. Do you know how you ended up finishing?
I think I only got one win.
Only got one win. So we're gonna go back to the way we did the first week. He had no idea he was going to pick games the first week, and I picked the games out and gave them to him, and he did. That was his best week. So, of course, he knows we're going to pick games again today, but he doesn't know which games, so hopefully that'll help him turn his luck around. Before we get to that, as I mentioned before about the boys' soccer, they will play Wednesday. Most likely they'll be on the road. We don't know what time or where yet. I checked the brackets again today, and they haven't posted any of the brackets for the 1A, 2A, 3A bracket. Some of the other brackets are up, but they haven't filled them in for Rogue River yet. But they will be, again, likely on the road on Wednesday, probably playing either the number one, number two, or number three team in the state. Depends where they end up in the bracket. So we'll be looking forward to that this week. And the only other high school action left to be played will be tonight. The football team will travel to Oak Ridge High School for a 7 o'clock kickoff. That game will be right here on 94.3 The Bridge. Our coverage will start at 6:50. And as my voice gets weaker and weaker, you may get some guest announcing from the Rogue Talk mascot, Cameron. He'll be making the trip with me, and I may have to throw him on microphone for at least parts of that game because my voice is getting weaker and weaker as the day goes on. So that's it for the schedule for Chieftain Sports. So let's get back to Cameron here and find out his picks. So are you ready to go, Cameron?
Yeah.
Okay, so the first game we're going to pick, number two Michigan is 7-0, and they will go to Michigan State, who's only 2-5, but this is a big rivalry game. The Michigan Wolverines are favored by 24.5 points. So who do you got in that one? You think Michigan can cover the 24.5, or are you going to take the upset?
I'm going to go with Michigan. I think they can get the 24 points. They have a really good defense, and their offense has been a lot better this year than last year. And they're not going to let that blocked punt from last year. They're getting revenge for that one.
Yeah, and I think I would agree with you about 95%. The only thing that gives me a little trepidation is the 24.5 points, and because this is a big rivalry game and it's at Michigan State, I'm not sure if they're going to cover. I definitely think Michigan's going to win, but so you're picking Michigan in that one.
Yep.
Okay, so let's go to the next one. Number four, Washington, also 7-0 record. They'll travel to number 17, Utah, with a 7-1 record. The Huskies are an 11-point favorite in this one. They've been definitely the cream of the crop in the Pac-12 this year, but are they going to cover 11 against Utah?
No, I think it's going to be a closer game. I actually think Utah could pull this one out. I think this is Washington hasn't really got much competition lately, and I think Utah is going to bring it to them. You know, they're one of those teams you don't know what they're going to be that one day. They could be the best team or the worst team. You know, it's when they show up and when they don't.
Yeah, I've noticed that too, and they're at home. Utah at home, so yeah, I think that's a pretty good pick. Take those 11 points and take the Utes. I think even if they lose, they're going to keep it close. You know, it used to be Stanford was the top defense in the Pac-12, but Washington's really kind of risen up this year to be, you know, most notably the best team in the conference, but. But again, Utah is only one loss, and they're playing at home, so I think that's probably a pretty safe pick. So let's move on to number 7, Nebraska, another 7-0 team. They'll travel to number 11, Wisconsin, with 2 losses on the year. The Badgers are actually favored in this one. They're a 9.5-point favorite at home against undefeated Nebraska. So who do you got in that one, Cameron?
I'm going to go with the Badgers. I think they've played tough teams, and Nebraska hasn't played a tough team yet. And it's at Wisconsin.
Yeah, Wisconsin's tough at home.
And with that defense, I don't think the Cornhuskers are going to – I don't think they can win that game. They're going to lose the game.
So we're looking for the Badgers to win it by 10 or more here with the being in the 9.5-point favorite. So kind of a might be considered a risky pick, but we'll see what happens on that one. So we got 2 more games to pick. Number 15, Auburn, they're 5-2. They're going to travel to Ole Miss. Ole Miss having a pretty disappointing season. They're only 3-4. But Auburn's only favored by 4 in this one. So who do you think in that one?
Auburn. I like the way they played last week. You know, they kind of surprised the people, and I think they'll do it again.
Yeah, and Ole Miss, you know, they're really good at home. That crowd definitely gets behind them. But I think I agree with you. I think Auburn, I wasn't sure about them, early this season. And they do have 2 losses, but they've been playing well lately, and I think they're definitely on the rise. So, and with only being a 4-point favorite, I think that's probably a pretty safe pick. So Cameron's picking Auburn in that one. And the last one we'll pick, number 3, Clemson, another undefeated 7-0 team, will travel to number 12, Florida State. Now, I gotta warn Cameron, Florida State's 5-2, and Clemson is only a 4-point favorite in this one. And I know Cameron likes to pick against Florida State, so let's see if he'll pick with his head or his heart this time.
I'm going to go with the upset, Florida State.
Going to take Florida State at home, and I can't argue with that. Again, another, you know, most teams do play better at home, but there's certain teams that just, whether it's the home field or the home crowd or what it is, and Florida State, going to be tough to beat at home, I think. For another upset pick, I think that might be a good one.
And I think they're doing a lot better now than from when they got beat by Louisville bad.
Yeah.
And now they're starting to get better, and I think they could upset Clemson, you know. Clemson's kind of looked up and down. Even though they're undefeated, I still think they have those missing pieces within their team.
So we're taking the upset in that one. So those are all the picks, and then you've got the final heading out to the final. I'll get this spit out, believe me, eventually. We'll get to the final football game tonight. What do you think the Chieftains' chances are against Oak Ridge?
I think they're a lot better than Monroe. I think they'll have a better game, and I think it'll be pretty close.
Yeah?
Close game.
Now, you were with us at the Monroe game. It was a really wet field. Chieftains were relying a little bit probably too much on a throwing game on a wet field. You think they're going to probably simplify things tonight a little bit?
Yeah, I think they're going to stay with that wildcat with Jaden running the ball. I think that worked perfectly. And at that Monroe game, that field is actually, they were saying it was worse than at Chieftain Field.
Yeah, yeah, it seemed like it was, although the thing with Chieftain Field is it's always worst in the middle of the field, and that field was bad almost everywhere. I mean, it didn't look bad, but you could tell from the slipping and sliding and all the brown uniforms that it was muddy. So are you picking the Chieftains to win, or are you just picking the Chieftains to make a good showing tonight?
I'm picking the Chieftains. I think they can win this
game. All right. So there's the big upset pick of the day for the mascot, Cameron, picking the Chieftains over Oak Ridge. So we'll see how that goes. Once again, coverage of that game will be starting at 6:50 tonight right here on 94.3 The Bridge, and kickoff will be at 7 o'clock, the final game of the season for the Chieftain football team. So make sure you're with us tonight here on 94.3 The Bridge. And that's going to be all we've got for you for today's show. We thank you for joining us, and just want to remind you, be good to one another, because Rogue Talk is over.
You've been listening to Rogue Talk on 94.3 The Bridge. Listen to Rogue Talk with Jeff Smith Fridays at 3 p.m. right here on Rogue River's Hometown Voice. 94.3 The Bridge. Or on demand at 943thebridge.com.